It is time now for an MLB.com Fantasy 411 podcast, the likes of which you have never heard, primarily because it's brand new. We've never done it before, so here's the deal. It's an extravaganza. It's myself, JB, alongside Corey Schwartz once again. We are going to record this on Friday. You might hear it anytime between now and infinity, and we hope you enjoy it and that some of the truths are still true.
So when you think about it, it's a time machine.
We are.
If you listen to this podcast in like 2034, it's a time machine.
If this is beamed out to outer space, and this is the message the
aliens
get.
Into Alpha Centauri or whatever.
Centauri gets this one. I'm going to say we're in good shape.
Hope so. Nice problem to have.
That's true.
Greetings from Earth. Welcome to the 411.
That's right. Here's what, get involved with baseball. It's a great place to be. It's the worldwide pastime. We're headed that way. All right, here's news and notes. Let's get to it. Stop your jibber jabber, JB. God, we got a thing to do. Jason Hayward. Oh, boy, what a just awful, awful event. Fractured jaw, 6 to 8 weeks means the rest of the season. Nice felt terrible. The whole organization felt awful. The Braves, nobody's happy. Hayward spit some blood in the ground and went to the hospital. He's deep. You know, he stuck his head in the dugout. He was like, I got to go to the hospital. That's how he said goodbye. So he's tough, but fractured jaw nonetheless.
Yeah, it stinks. I mean, everybody feels bad. You know, you never like to see anybody get injured. You can dislike that player or this player, but you never want to see guys get hurt, especially something horrible like that. Hayward, as you said, out for the rest of the season. There's a shot he could come back for the playoffs. The thing you've got to be worried about is that he's got a broken jaw. It's going to be tough for him to eat. They didn't have to wire it shut. He got a plate in two different places in his jaw, but it wasn't wired shut, so he should be able to eat a little bit more, but you've got to worry about strength and conditioning when he comes back. If you've got him in a keeper league, look, you sock him away. He's definitely a guy you're going to want for next year. He was really on a hot streak before he got hurt. As far as this year, you can cut him. You know, the nice thing for the Braves, I mean, the silver lining is that they've got a huge lead. They can afford to be without him for a while. But the guys they have taking his spot are not giving you a lot of fantasy value. Jordan Schaefer, career 230 hitter in parts of a few major league seasons. He can steal one steal per about five games. So that's a let's call it a 35-30 steal pace. That's valuable. Joey Turdoslavic. See, I had to work that out on the fly. He hasn't done much. He's been a bit player so far, hitting 250 and 52 at bats.
Turdoslavic. Yeah.
He was hitting in AAA, though, JB. I can say that. 318 with 18 homers in 85 games. If we see him play more, he could be worth a pickup in deeper leagues and NL onlys. Schaefer for the speed, Turdoslavic for a little bit of power and average. But tough break for Jason Hayward, no pun intended. He was really swinging the bat a lot better.
It was terrible. He was on a hot streak, and you hate to see. He's struggled with injuries before. This one is a non-controllable injury.
Right.
And we're just glad he is okay.
Yeah, it's not injury-prone. I mean, a pitch got away, and it's as bad as it gets.
Brandon Beachy of those Braves, scratched from Sunday's start. The concerning issue is what he's doing in his time off, which is, hello, Dr. Andrews.
Yeah, when you hear scratch and Dr. Andrews with your pitcher, that's terrible news. And what's unusual is that most guys who come back from TJ surgery, it holds up very well. You hear of very few guys having to go back for another one.
Right.
This could just be sort of post-op soreness that maybe he would have encountered in rehab. Tough to say, but again, bad timing. He was really throwing well. Got routed in his first start coming off the DL, but had four straight quality starts after that. 23-4 strikeout to walk rate overall. So it looked like the Brandon Beachy of old was rounding back into shape. You know, the Braves are reasonably well positioned to cover this. They also lost Tim Hudson, but Alex Wood has moved into the rotation very nicely. Paul Mahalam came back last night. He gives them innings, and again, they have that big lead. But, you know, if you've got Brandon Beachy right now, you just have your fingers crossed. You're going to go out and play pitcher ditch to fill his spot, take Alex Wood if he's available. This might be a good time in a keeper league to go out and make a trade offer for him, see if you can get the owner to panic. Look, if it turns out he needs another TJ, he's gone for next year. But if it turns out it's just one of those things where maybe he need to skip a turn or sit, you know, put him on the DL for a short-term thing, you know, forearm soreness, whatever it may be. But if you could get him at a discount, you might want to sniff around it right now and see what happens.
Nice little late-season play for Beachy, if you like the risk. Rafael Betancourt re-injures his elbow. He's headed back to the DL. Ooh,
and this,
a sigh.
This sounds even worse. This could be, right now they're saying the trainer examined it after the game on Thursday night and feels like he's got a torn UCL. That would be TJ surgery. You know, Rafael Betancourt is 38 years old. The Rockies had an option on him they were expected to exercise, but a 38-year-old going on into TJ surgery, this could be it for him. There is the shot that this is the end for Rafael Betancourt. Best case scenario is, you know, he maybe is out for the rest of the year. He was on his fourth game back from the DL. He had an appendectomy, was in his fourth game. He actually said he felt it on Wednesday night when he pitched. But, you know, figured, you know, again, it was sort of, you know, normal post-op soreness, working his way back after some time off. But then on Thursday, he really felt it and feels like he blew it out on his last pitch that he threw to Michael Young. He said, I just couldn't throw another pitch after that. So, you know, from a fantasy standpoint, if there's a silver lining here, it's for the Rex Brothers owners, because they probably never even cut him when Betancourt came back, because you always wait and see when the closer comes off the DL. So Rex Brothers will be the closer from here on out. Looks like he'll be the closer next year now, too, you know, barring a miracle. But tough, tough break for Betancourt. I mean, it's a shame, you know. Hayward gets hit in the face by a pitch when he was on a hot streak. Beachy comes back from TJ. I mean, what kind of rehab these guys must go through? And Betancourt, you know, coming off that appendectomy, trying to, you know, improve his value for next year, get that next contract. Now he suffers that big injury. Real, real sad news for all three of these guys.
It's a bad break all the way around. Tommy Hunter, he of some bad breaks in the past, gets the save on Wednesday. But Buck Show says, Jim Joe, still the closer. What's the word in O-Town?
Well, let's start with Johnson. You know, he's blown nine saves this year after blowing only three all of last year. But he hasn't really been a markedly worse pitcher. I know that sounds crazy.
It's crazy, man.
They'll sail it at him. Walk rate is up, but the strikeout rate is up. So similar strikeout to walk ratio overall. The ground ball rate isn't as good as last year, but still an extreme ground ball pitcher. The two big things that have hurt him is that he's regressed the hit rate. Last year, a very lucky hit rate. This year, it's regressed into something a little bit more normal. But even worse, the home run to fly ball rate. He's a sinker ball pitcher who's become extremely home run prone this year. You can say that's bad location. You can say it's pitch selection, anything you want. But his home run to fly ball rate is exceptionally high for any pitcher, never mind a ground ball pitcher. So Showalter says he hasn't given up on Johnson as his closer. But here's the big tell. On Tuesday, he came in the ninth inning, I think, against the Rays, down 4-2 with runners on, and gave up three straight hits and turned that into garbage time. So between that and then Hunter getting the save on Wednesday, you've got to figure now Hunter is the lead dog in that bullpen.
Yep.
Hunter, 48-11 strikeout to walk rate in 68 in a third inning, successful transformation from starter to reliever. He's got to be picked up in any league where he's available right now. If you've got Johnson, you want to bench but not cut him, wait and see. But Hunter is the guy to grab. Buck can say whatever he wants, but actions speak louder than words. Garbage time on Tuesday. Hunter gets the save on Wednesday.
There we go. And also manager speak right up there with GM speak.
It's the kiss of death, you know. Yeah. I love you, JJ. You broke my heart.
Exactly.
And then he's in the canoe, and it ends badly. They're sending JJ out in the canoe.
That's right. Godspeed, young man. Willian Rosario homers for his third straight game. That's on Thursday. Extends his hit streak to 13. If Gatman beat the streak, you're feeling pretty good.
Just keep riding him. Five homers and 18 RBIs. And this isn't one of those things where, like, he's getting a bloop single to keep the streak alive. 20 for 55. That's a .455 average. That's
Hello.
The real stuff, man. And five homers. You know, Rosario, he's had a few games at first base. So he's now first among catchers with 66 RBIs, 70 overalls. Second among catchers with 18 homers, 20 overall. J.P. Arencibia leads catchers with 19 homers as a catcher. Last year, he led catchers with 28 homers. And the amazing thing is, this guy is still a very, very raw hitter. 4-1 strikeout to walk rate last year. Worse than 6-1 this year. I had to do the math in my head. I had to do the gazintas.
Hey, with the things.
The math.
The tens, twos.
94 strikeouts and only 15 walks, but he's managed to maintain a decent average because he's got such great power. Arguably the number one fantasy catcher this year when you factor in the Triple Crown category. So the thing you want to keep an eye on, though, this isn't going to hurt you for this year. It's not going to hurt you next year for keeper leagues because obviously he's already qualified a catcher. He's played first base three times this week, two as a starter. And Jordan Pacheco, their former backup first baseman, has been seeing some work behind the plate.
Yes.
So you wonder if they're going to start to transition Rosario to more of a full-time first baseman, you know, life after Todd Helton, rather than 130 games of him behind the plate, 150 at first base. That helps his value from a counting number standpoint, but obviously worth less as a catcher. So not something to worry about for 2014, but keep an eye on long-term.
That is something in your keeper leagues to notice. If I said he's got 8 home runs in 16 games, could you name the player?
Willian Rosario.
Close.
No.
Next on the rundown. For those of you who can't see it, I'll give you a little time right now. It is... Corey Schwartz.
Donnie Murphy.
Go figure.
Wow. Steven Strasburg rolling along with a 4-1 lead in the ninth inning on Thursday. A bloop, a bleeder, a bloop, and a blast from Donnie Murphy. Tie game ND. Donnie Murphy this year, eight homers in 55 at-bats with the Cubs.
Wow.
You know, look, let's be fair about this. Donnie Murphy is not a guy who doesn't have some pop. In his career over parts of several seasons coming into this year, 18 homers and 577 at-bats. So, you know, it's not a shock that he's showing a little bit of power. What's surprising to me is that he's a 328 hitter this year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, 55 at-bats, but the numbers are what they are. He's a career 216 hitter, and that includes this year.
Yoinks.
Yeah, so, he's 30 years old. He's a journeyman. Look, the upshot of this is he's a journeyman player with a little bit of pop, having the 2 weeks of his life.
Right.
We've said that about many players before. Ride the wave as long as it lasts, but it will crash on the beach at some point.
And then you just have to cut bait.
Yeah, I mean, between Luis Valbuena, Donnie Murphy, and Mike Olt, who was their third baseman of the future that they got in the Garza deal, and Ian Stewart, even before all of them, they're cornering the market on the 220 hitter with big power third baseman. So Greg Nettles likes what's going on in Chicago.
Absolutely. All right, I'm going to play that game again. He's got a 23-5 strikeout-to-walk ratio in 19 innings pitched in three games since coming off the DL.
Oh, see, when you said since coming off the DL,
yes,
that's how I still didn't know you were talking about.
Exactly.
No,
unless you knew entirely everybody who was on the DL.
I know who it is.
I'll give you, listening at home or on the road or not driving, I hope, but wherever you may be, a few moments. 23-5 strikeout-to-walk ratio, three games off the DL. Also,
the answer is?
Broke Jason Hayward's jaw.
Ow. We had, I felt bad. I mean, I'm sure John Neese feels bad. He's been throwing great. You know, three good matchups, too. 19 innings, 23 strikeouts. That's the proof right there.
Yep.
The key thing, there are two big things for Neese. You know, he was really struggled in the first half. His velocity was down and his walk rate was way up. In these first three starts, we've seen him able to touch 92, 93 with that fastball consistently, 88 with the cutter, and really the key number, five walks in 19 innings. The command is there. Next week, he's got a two-start week, Philadelphia and Washington. We'll talk about that in a little while.
Two-start
then after
pitch.
That, Cleveland, Washington, and San Francisco. And again, Washington part of the two-start week next week. So there's a little teaser for you to listen to the rest of the podcast. John Neese looking at some smooth sailing from here on out.
Here's another guess the player. 29-7 strikeout-to-walk ratio, 23 innings pitched. His first four starts versus the Angels. He K'd seven. He is the Salazar. Danny Salazar.
Danny Salazar has been awesome. And again, Toronto before everybody got hurt, Detroit a big offense, Minnesota and the Angels, you know, pretty decent matchups there. This guy has unbelievable stuff. We've talked about him before. The reason I wanted to bring up Danny Salazar, this is a good time in non-keeper leagues.
Non-keeper.
That you might want to be thinking about cashing in on his hot start. He's got Minnesota and Detroit with his next two starts.
Mm-hmm.
One easy matchup, one tough matchup. But the thing is this, he had Tommy John surgery a few years back. Let me give you his innings by year since then. In 2011, 14 and two-thirds. Last year, 87 and two-thirds. This is total, everything. This year, 116 between the minors and the majors. From 14 to 87 to this year, how far do you think he's going to go? Not much farther.
Mm-hmm.
So in a keeper league, look, they're going to shut him down when they shut him down. You're just going to stash him away for 2014. But in a non-keeper league, or if you're in a weekly league, you know, with playoffs coming up, you've got to think about this. This guy is a prime candidate for September shutdown. And if you've got the Tony Cingranis of the world, Matt Harvey, Zach Wheeler, Jose Fernandez, a lot of great young pitchers who put up some big, big results this year are going to get gradually shut down in early into mid-September. You've got to plan for that. If you are contending this year.
Yes.
If you're in a keeper league or you're rebuilding, you don't care. But if you're contending this year and you've been riding these young arms, you're not going to have them down the stretch, and you need to be prepared for that.
Yeah, especially transaction dates. You need to be, if you're behind, then it's just gone. Don't let that happen to you when you're right there in the hunt. Concussions are a serious problem. Joe Mauer is now on the 7-day DL with a concussion. Ron Gardenhire says, Mauer, you know what? Broseph, your days of catching, they're numbered, my house.
Could be numbered. Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, he already says he's feeling better. You know, a lot of guys, you read these stories.
Mauer.
Yeah, Mauer. You know, a couple of days after the concussion, they feel better. The cobwebs are out.
Yep.
But these things tend to linger. I mean,
they do.
Look at Justin Morneau just as one example. I mean, he's not proof of anything, but concussions are serious business. They take a lot longer to recover sometimes than we expect or hope. You got to keep an eye on that for Joe Mauer. You know, again, the key thing is here, if he moves off catcher, year over year, this is arguably the number one fantasy catcher. This year, he's either third or fourth.
Yep.
Rosario and Yadi Molina ahead of him. Then he's in a mix with Lucroy and Posey.
Yes.
But you're talking an elite fantasy player.
Top tier.
310, 12 homers, 60 RBIs, whatever it is, up and down. You put that at first base, it doesn't play from a fantasy standpoint. It's a nice to have, but, and I don't want this to be an insult to either player, he's basically having the same offensive season as James Loney.
Yes.
Mauer's a catcher, Loney is a first baseman. The gap between them in value is enormous. Keep an eye on this long term. You want to see him come back, get back behind the plate. Justin Morneau, I believe, will be a free agent after this year. If you start seeing Mauer playing a lot of first base in September, that's a scary thing for his long-term keeper value.
Yes, we're talking about fantasy value here, not baseball player,
right?
Real baseball.
Right.
That's what this podcast is about. It's not called the MLB.com Real Baseball 411 podcast. It's the fantasy.
Look, it's sort of like the thing with Rosario. What keeps the guy on the field is good for the club, is good for baseball, is good for fantasy. But from a fantasy standpoint, when you're doing that math, who's a replacement value at catcher? Derek Norris?
Yes.
Steven Vogt? Kurt Suzuki, I just named the entire A's catching group.
Yeah.
You know, it's
enormous.
You like to have catchers who can hit.
That is often the difference. In your roster, that is often the difference. The teams that actually have catchers producing versus the teams that are just eating the 200 and the 20 RBIs and praying.
Right.
Sometimes hoping guys.
I mean, that's why.
Hey, maybe you guys should give them a day off.
I mean,
let him sit for a
while. I played in unmixed leagues where guys not only punted catcher from the standpoint of trying to get production, they sought out the little used backup catcher who would get 102 at bats just to minimize the damage.
That's true. It's one way to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's how bad catcher can get. So
catcher can be the kicker of fantasy baseball.
Catcher can be the kicker. That's very alliterative.
It's true.
And metaphorical as well.
It is metaphorical.
Or is that a simile? Anyway.
But also, every one of the catchers who plays professional baseball could kick my butt, so I don't want them to mistake.
We're not disparaging them.
Don't mistake what we're talking about here. For all of you catchers that are listening right now, here we go. It's time for quick hits. The catchers kicking. The quick hits are next. We're starting with, let's stay with K's. It is time to talk about Daisuke. Daisuke, pitching for the Mets. Come on now. Everything's going the Mets way.
This is great. Daisuke pitched in AAA all year for Columbus, the Indians' AAA affiliate. 95 strikeouts and 103 in a third innings. That's the best we have to say about that. Asked for his release. The Mets signed him, 2 days ago?
Mm-hmm.
And he will start on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Jenry Mejia and Jeremy Hefner out for the year, Hefner potentially facing Tommy John surgery, and Matt Harvey on an innings limit, they just needed a live body. So here you go. Daisuke, deep leagues, see what happens. He gets Detroit the first time out. We'll be patient.
Yes.
He's Daisuke. People will always watch.
Daisuke's coming back.
People will always look.
Oh,
they'll always
look.
Watch.
You're going to watch that. Speaking of good pitching, Matty Cain took a liner in his last start. What are the repercussions for said injury? How bad is he? What's the word?
Gabby Sanchez right off the forearm on Thursday night. Contusion, nothing broken, no long-term damage. But right now they're calling him questionable for his next start. And it's a shame because Cain was really starting to pitch better the last five or six times.
And he'd had a rough start and he was getting things
right. Tough year.
Things go late August, September, man. It's the long part of the grind. Things start to wear down. Guys start to get hurt. It's a real deal. Mujica, I put my notes down here. Corey, you can help me out. I don't know what I said.
Okay.
DTD. Oh, he's day-to-day.
Yeah.
Aren't we all?
Aren't we all? Edward Mujica has been dealing with a knot in his upper back and his neck, shoulder.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, right. Especially as we get older, JB. He was checked out. There's no structural damage. It's just sort of a muscular, you know, knot kind of thing. He was unavailable on Thursday. Trevor Rosenthal finished in a non-save situation, 6-2 win. Mujica not expected to pitch either on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to wonder if Rosenthal will also be available on Friday. So those of you in daily leagues that are chasing saves, you know, check out the Cardinals bullpen. Will it be Kevin Segrist? Will it be Seth Maness? I don't know, but it's wide open now. But Mujica should be okay long term.
All right, there we go. And finally, Westbrook goes to the DL. Martinez called up. What's the repercussions all the way around on that?
Westbrook goes out with a strained ERA. It was about 9 over his last 5-6 starts. Carlos Martinez gets the call. Mike Wacha pitched in relief on Thursday, so it would appear that Carlos Martinez will get to go back in the rotation. They get Cincinnati and Pittsburgh next week. So in daily leagues, watch for that Pittsburgh start. In two start weeks, you'll have to evaluate it, but a big-time keeper prospect.
That is a big-time prospect who might get called up. Might make him eligible for you. Go get him. Own him. Keep him forever and ever and ever until you have to turn your back on him like so much cold soda.
Cold soda's good. You mean warm soda.
Warm soda, right. We are getting to, we're going to queue up some things. We got a guest that's going to join us, which is very exciting. It's Corey and I love talking to each other, but every once in a while you need that third person who comes in and really writes the ship.
Spice things up a little bit.
The train, while we try to parallel park this train, one of my favorite sayings. You need some guidance, you need some help. Laura Michaels is going to join us. Creative Sports, Masterball, Tout Wars, Giants, A's, Stats, DragonFriendlyWee.com. Pretty much superhuman, if I'm not mistaken. Laura, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's a real pleasure, guys. I haven't talked to Corey for a while, man.
I know, it's been too long, and I you're on the West Coast for our listeners. I appreciate you rolling out of bed at the crack of noon to talk to us.
Anybody who I know wishes they were AT&T when Metallica does the national anthem. My kind of human.
That's awesome, man. So you're one of these, you're known as the Zen Master in the fantasy world. For the benefit of people who are new to the podcast or haven't read your work yet, and shame on them, how did you become the Zen Master? What's the story behind that?
I'm not sure. I mean, where it originated from, and I guess I do have sort of a be here now philosophy of life, or I don't know if it's philosophy or it's just I've been through enough that that's sort of what the universe hammered into me. But my first year at Tout, which also happened to be Jason Gray's first year at Tout, I had a draft. We drafted, actually in those days, it was long enough ago that we drafted at Steve Moyer's basement in Bath, Pennsylvania, believe it or not. And it was a crowded show. Anyway, I wound up with Chris Widger. I'd never, played really in a league at that level before, and I remember riding on the plane out just thinking, just don't embarrass yourself. But I nominated Chris Widger at one point when I had two catchers, thinking somebody would bid $2 on him, and I heard crickets. And that was the first time I realized, uh-oh, these guys are serious. So I ate Chris Widger as my DH, and I actually carry him on my roster for the whole season. And it was one of those years where I had one of those teams that was languishing at the bottom of the standings till around the All-Star break. But I had Miguel Tejada for cheap. I had a bunch of guys for cheap that just got hot. And I ended up winning. And as I was climbing up the standings, I still had Widger active. And nobody could figure out how I could possibly move up into the top teams and eventually win with Chris Widger active on my team. And the reality was I was doing okay with him in that spot, so I just left him there. He was in my DH just in case something else came in that I could do better with, which eventually did happen. I made an end-of-season trade for, God, now I can't remember the name, Joe. What was his name? Played third base for the Royals.
Joe Randa, the Joker?
The Pirates before that.
Joe Randa, the Joker.
Yeah. Very good. Anyway, I traded for Joe Randa with a month left in the season and put him in that spot. And Jason, at first, Jason Gray said, I don't know what's going on with that team. He's got some kind of voodoo. Oh, no, he's got some kind of Zen going on. So he kept saying I had this Zen going on. And when I won, he just dubbed me the Zen Master. And it kind of stuck ever since. And I like it, actually. It almost gives the illusion that I know what I'm doing.
So. Well, you got into Tout through, you write for mastersball.com now. You got into Tout through your own site, Creative Sports. How did that come about? I mean, most of the people we've been talking to all year, with few exceptions, were just sort of doing other things, and they sort of gradually fell into or were absorbed into the fantasy world. And, you know, how did Creative Sports come about, and how did, you know, you sort of get to this point?
Well, I Creative Sports, and I've been on the web for like 17, 18 years now, so that's a long time with respect to the fantasy industry. And if you have listeners who remember the days when we used to do statistic downloads from the USA Today every Tuesday and Wednesday, that was it. That, you know, and you had 4,800 baud modems, which I can't believe that sounds like the old clunky days of the Model A Ford, but yeah. Internet-wise, it was. Anyway, I started way back then. I was between gigs, and I had been writing for John Benson, who was sort of a pioneer in the fantasy publishing industry. And I was between gigs, and the internet was new, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to teach myself HTML, and I'm going to start a website and just see what, just for fun. So that's how I started. And what also managed to happen was that there was a controversy at the time between Ron Chandler and Tout Wars at the time and John Benson, who published all the rules, because Tout Wars, essentially used the original Roto rules, and they'd been copyrighted in a John Benson book. So there was kind of a territorial imperative about who could publish what without acknowledging copyright rules. And since I knew Chandler and I knew I knew Benson pretty well, and I knew Ron a little bit, I'd bought his books. So I interviewed both of them and then wrote kind of an article on what really happened, because for some reason nobody else had done that at the time. And for some reason that put me in a position to be noticed by the Tout board of the time, because Tout was by invitation. And I went to the AFL that year. That really made a big difference, too. Jason Gray went that year. There were a few of us who, you know, that was Trace Wood. It was the first time we all went to the Fall League Chandler soiree there. So we all met everybody that was pretty much Tout related as well. Anyway, the next spring came and I got invited, which it is by invite. And I got invited in 2000, and that was the first year I went. And I happened to also win that year. So that's where I became the Zen master. So it all kind of coalesced around that. I'm still not really sure what happened, but that's not really unusual for me. I kind of look out on my porch at the bay every once in a while. My wife and I own a house with some friends up in Tahoe, and every time I'm up there, I kind of look out into the woods and go, "How did this happen?" So.
Very zen.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the things that I really respect about you as a fantasy player, I want to go away from fantasy for a second after this, is that you're the guy, I think, who walks the walk more than anybody else I know of not getting attached to names or anything. You sort of look at from the standpoint of, I'm going to take what the draft gives me. If I need categories, I'm going to go with the guy who best fits those categories. And you really do take sort of a zen approach to the draft, I think. I mean, you know, I know you're being tongue-in-cheek about it, but I really think you execute that type of plan better than anybody.
Thank you. I mean, I do try not to be influenced. Like, during the season, I write every week about minor leaguers, and I look at the guys I write about, but, for example, when I go to the Fall League, I don't want to know what the statistics of anybody were. I figure they wouldn't be at the Fall League if their franchise didn't think highly of them, but I want to see what the guy looks like, if they have a, you know. I mean, I remember seeing John Mayberry Jr. in the Fall League, and, man, I've never seen a guy who looked more like a ball player than him, and he had killer stats, but he had a big looping swing that you could exploit, and I just sort of thought, uh-oh. I mean, he's got pop when he connects with the ball, but unless he fixes that, he's probably never going to be an everyday star player, because somebody will be able to pick on it. And so, and I mean, he's all right. Obviously, he's got some good power, but I'm not sure if he'll ever be a star player if he doesn't fix that at some juncture. But the truth is, I think we don't trust, and it's not just in the baseball world, we don't trust our own eyes and our own instincts and our own intelligence enough where we get reliant on other people like me who write about this stuff. And, you know, I think we get scared to take a chance on what we trust. And I don't know about you guys, but most of the time, if somebody asks a question or trivia or something like that, your gut reaction will put your fingers on it, but then you don't trust that, and you end up kind of shooting yourself in the foot. So I think we deny a lot of our innate skills and perceptions and get them clouded up in too many statistics. Not that I don't like stats or there aren't stats that I think are important.
Good, that's good life philosophy.
I think that's, yeah, I think your instincts and your initial inertia, not to run it all together, wow, makes good sense.
And by the way, Laura, I got to compliment you. You're the first person who's ever used the term territorial imperative in the history of the Fantasy 411, so I compliment you for that as well.
Oh, maybe the spirit of Robert Ardrey is even listening. I don't know.
One more thing I want to ask you about. So on top of all the baseball stuff you do, you're a stat stringer for us and doing Giants and A's games, and you're also a very accomplished musician. A lot of people may not know that, a very accomplished songwriter and guitar player. How did you get involved in playing music, and, you know, how do you find time for everything?
I don't know. You know, I think a lot of it, and a lot of the way I am is I've written about it enough, but I was really sick for years and years and years when I was a kid. And I never thought I'd survive, to tell you the truth. Nobody knew what was wrong with me for all the way through junior high school and high school. And I've had a number of times where my body just sort of failed on me. Nobody expected me to survive. So I've had that and some other travails, and I think what I was able to walk away from that with is kind of that Zen sort of, you know, be in the moment, enjoy every day, treat every day like it is your last, you know, don't say bad things to people or be mean to the, or say anything that you might regret, do the best you can, take as much of a bite as you can out of every day, and I think that's made it so that sometimes I stretch myself too thin, but I just really love the things that I love, and I love doing them, and baseball and music just happened to fall within that. I was always a music junkie when I was a kid. My brother and I had a make-believe radio station. I played air guitar when I, you know, before air guitar was popular, and I mean, I did, you know, have a guitar growing up and sort of taught myself. Actually, I taught myself the entire Tommy songbook, and I taught myself how to play chords wrong, which my teacher now always kind of cracks up when I finger a chord or he's watching me. When I was first seeing him, he'd go, what are you playing? It was like I was playing left-handed and upside down and backwards, like Hendrix or Albert King or something. But I played, and when I got into my 40s, I finished graduate school, and I bought myself a Telecaster as a graduation present, and I just started knocking around, and I met a guy, fortunately, who was a really accomplished musician, Alan Friedman, and he sort of took me under his wing, and then he introduced me to a guy, Steve Gibson, who has become my teacher and my producer and my friend, and he plays in my band, The Biletones, now. So I just started taking lessons, and I also sort of decided if I was going to pretend Tom Petty, I might as well be Tom Petty and not be afraid to do things on stage or how I look. And I know you play out now, Corey, and I hope you know what I mean, that you know, if I'm going to be here on stage, I'm not going to act like somebody who's afraid to be here. I'm just going to not worry about what I look like and just sort of devil may care and whatever comes, comes, and let go and be in the moment there. And it actually produces some pretty good musical moments. But I've been practicing and, you know, playing now for almost 20 years, so I can kind of play the guitar and play the bass pretty well in front of people. Well, you know, if you do anything for 20 years, you should you should get. I think I told my ex-wife one time when she came to see one of my bands that I think I'm sort of starting to get pretty good at it. She said, "You've been doing it for 18 years. I should hope so." So, you know.
Well, I've been working here
that's
for
sort of.
I've been
that,
working
that's
here
how
for,
that came to be.
Oh, sorry. I've been working here for 13 years. Hopefully my employer will believe that after that long I've gotten somewhat capable at it.
Well, don't forget, as Jason Gray once said, Grudzelanic probably is the code for the MLB.com client in some kind of play or other, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, what you're referring to there for our listeners is that, you know, LAR scoring games, Giants and A's games, we use, it's basically just the 26 letters and the 10 digits and some punctuation, but you can turn that into any play code for any kind of play you can think of. And some of them get pretty crazy. You know, the FC, SAC, BG, 1 to 2, EH2, whatever. So, yeah, Grudzelanic has to be a code. It's got to be like the key to unlocking the universe, like Mixelplex, you know?
Exactly.
It translates to 42, which that means it's Jackie Robinson Day, which means everybody in the press box doesn't know who's up.
That's right. Everybody's exactly. Heard 42.
Everybody's one. All right, well, we're going to take a big bite of this day by doing two-star pitches for next week, seeing which pitchers are up to snuff. Are you ready, Lar?
I hope so.
All right.
He's been waiting 18 years for this moment.
Right. All 18 years, all guitar playing and all fantasy baseball has led to this very moment. Here we go. Two-star pitcher starts with Jonathan Neese, who's at home versus Philly on the road at Washington. What do you say, Lar?
Washington makes me nervous. Actually, Philly makes me nervous, too. Now, I mean, Neese has been having a nice year, and I think the Mets are coalescing, but boy, I'd be nervous about playing, especially Washington. And I don't know, there's something about those matchups against ostensibly easy teams, you know. I mean, if it looks like the Phillies could be taken advantage of, then sometimes that tells me the Phillies could just go crazy on him.
Mm.
He's a lefty too, right? Isn't Neese a southpaw?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd be a little bit wary about that.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more ambitious about this one, or optimistic. You know, we talked about earlier before you came on, Neese has been throwing very well since coming off the DL. Washington's a very good offense, as you mentioned, but they do struggle against lefties. And Philadelphia, between the injuries and bringing in a lot of young players and everything, they're not a very good team right now. So I agree with you, there's risk in this one, but I would be more inclined to go for it.
All right, there we have a split decision on these. Sonny Gray is at the Tigers, Lar, and he's at home against the Rays. What do you say?
I've been away. I noted in my email to you guys that I'd been at music camp and up at Tahoe, and I'd been sort of off the grid, as it were. So I missed Mr. Gray's pretty good starts the last few games for Oakland. You know, he is. I would give a little more credence to him than Nice, not because for any other reason other than A, the Tigers haven't seen him before, and Oakland can give the Tigers some problems. They did last year, and then coming back to pitch at home, I don't think that's a bad gamble just because nobody really has a book on him. And when he comes back to Oakland, it is a pretty good pitcher's park. And I still think the A's are very, very underrated. Nobody really understands that they're a lot better than it seems like the sum of their parts are.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, sort of like with Nice, there's definitely risk here. You know, Gray has big strikeout potential, but Tampa Bay and Detroit are two teams that don't strike out a lot on the whole. As teams, they make very good contact. And particularly Detroit, these are very good offensive teams. But you're talking about a guy who struck out better than a batter per inning since coming up from the minors, a big-time prospect. I would go for it. I might want to close my eyes and make some other plans, especially when he's pitching in Detroit, but I think I would go for it.
All right, we got agreement on that one. Phil Hughes is at Toronto and at home against the Orioles. What do you say, Lar?
Oh, Phil Hughes just scares me all the way up and down the block. I don't know about you, Cor. I know you love your Yanks too, but that guy just makes me nervous. I probably wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot cattle prod.
Yeah, I wouldn't cattle prod him. I mean, I don't want to hurt the guy. I'm not anti, but you know, with Hughes, you typically look at it as purely a home road play. But in Toronto, the Blue Jays are one of the best home run hitting teams in baseball. It's a great home run park. Even with Bautista out, even with Rasmus out, there's the potential here for some long ball, so I would stay away from this one.
All right, agreed on that as well. Brandon McCarthy is at home versus the Padres and at home against the Giants.
I love Brandon. He pitched really well. He's a gutsy guy, but I don't think he's all the way back from his injuries or whatever. You know, I was at the game when he got beamed last year, and he just doesn't. I don't know if he's lost it, but I just don't have a lot of trust in him, and at least on the mound.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's a great guy and a great story, and I have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, on top of all that, he hasn't been sharp since coming off the DL. The Reds hammered him last time out. He's got almost a 7 ERA. You know, if he was going into San Diego and San Francisco, I might take a shot because those are great pitcher's parks. But both of those teams hit a lot better on the road. Arizona's a good hitter's park. I would shy away from it.
All right, and Lar, well, we got two more to go. Here's another two-star pitcher. Félix Dubron is taking on the Orioles at home and the White Sox at home.
Ooh, split Sox, I guess not split Sox, Sox, Orioles, Sox. Orioles make me nervous, although I'm not really sure how the Red Sox continue to muddle on, but they certainly are. They're very tenacious. And I kind of looked at that. Whatever else happens, they don't seem to be caught in horrible losing or horrible winning streaks. So I'm thinking he could probably walk away with at least a win out of those two tough opponents. But I wouldn't be so afraid of that one. The Sox actually have been playing pretty okay of late, and somehow I think it's a team thing. And I would sort of trust him on those starts.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. You know, Baltimore, as you said, is a very good offense, and we should make note of this for Hughes as well, to be fair. Baltimore hasn't been as good an offense since the All-Star break as they were before. They have cooled off a little bit. Machado's cooled off. Davis still hitting for power, but the batting average is dropping and so on. And Dubron has been a lot better since the All-Star break, striking out fewer guys, but really cutting his walk rate, and that was the big thing sort of holding him back. So with that in mind against Baltimore and then that beautiful start against the White Sox, I'm going for it.
All right. Everybody's in on Felix. And finally, a two-star pitcher we're going to look at. Tyson Ross is at those Diamondbacks and at those Wild Dodgers.
You know, again, Tyson Ross went to Berkeley. I'm a Berkeley guy. I saw him pitch for the A's. And, well, I saw him go out to the mound with the A's. And he looks like he should be dominant, and he's not. He kind of reminds me of a pitching version of Wilson Delgado. Remember him? He was like 6'9", and he couldn't hit a home run. So I wouldn't start Tyson Ross at all under any circumstances for any team.
Wow. you know, he's been pitching very well since rejoining the rotation at 2 ERA and 6 starts. But, you know, you talked about his, you know, him looking like a pitcher. They've really made over his mechanics quite a bit, trying to lengthen out his stride a little bit, trying to get him to command his slider a little bit. And he's been very effective. But these are two big-time offenses. He's going onto the road. Both of these teams in the top six in baseball in OPS since the All-Star break. As much as I like what he's done in those first six starts, it's a very small sample, and these are two big offenses. So I would, if I was chasing wins and strikeouts and I didn't care about my ratios, I would go for this. But I'm just looking at the big picture here. I think you got to be conservative and sit him out.
A lot of category.
And that is a good point, that it is at the part of the year where you do sort of have to chase wins whether you like it or not. And I also do believe if you're going to chase anything pitching-wise, it is strikeouts, because if you've got a guy who can get strikeouts, chances are whip ratio and wins will fall right into place behind them. That said, I still have, he's never been as dominant as I think he should be for a big guy.
All right, there you go.
There you go, two-star pitchers. Category needs. Know them. Use them. Go get them. All right, list of questions. Have questions. Let's go to them. I need outfield help and can get Beltran for Anibal Sanchez. This is from Jay from Huntington. Beltran for Sanchez. Lar, is this good? That's his question.
Well, obviously, it always depends on what kind of league, what position you're in, what you got to give up, and what you got to go. But that, I think at this point in the season, if you need to pick a crapshooter and an outfielder, he's probably, and you could afford to give up the strikeouts and the Sanchez pitching, that's probably as good a deal as you're going to get. Beltran's usually a pretty good player down the stretch offensively.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, on overall value, it's fair. The only concern I have is that Beltran's continue to hit for average, continue to drive in runs, but only 3 homers in 30 games since the All-Star break. And I think he did fade a little bit last year, too. So, you know, I'm not saying don't do the deal, but go into it with eyes wide open. If I was really desperate for power, I might be a little bit more hesitant about this, but if I just wanted a good outfielder, and Beltran is a good outfielder, then I would go for that.
EB, there you go. That's your answer, Jay from Huntington. Of these two grads, which two would you want most? Lar, Gallardo, Nice, Weichen, or Cashner?
What was the context of?
I think it's just rest of the season. Which two would you want?
Okay, and it's, let's see, it was
Gallardo,
Nice, Wei-Yin Chen for the Orioles, and Andrew Cashner.
You know, I'm a big Cashner fan, and he's been pitching very well and getting the hang. And I also think, he pitches in a good pitcher's park, and with September call-ups, he's probably going to have some guys he can exploit. So he would be the top of my list. And I'd probably go Gallardo after that. He's usually been a pretty good second-half pitcher. He's a strikeout pitcher, and Ryan Braun not Milwaukee tends to play pretty well down the stretch, even though they've don't really have much they're playing for at this juncture, but I'd go those two guys.
Yeah, I agree on Cashner. I would take Nice over Gallardo. We've seen Gallardo this year with the velocity down, with the injury problems, the strikeouts down from what we've seen in the past. I like the way Nice is throwing since coming off the DL. You know, the Mets have a tough schedule that he's not going to get a lot of run support, but I think if you look at the pitcher he was last year and the pitcher he was expected to be this year, I think if he succeeds on that, he's the guy that gives you the best value down the stretch.
All right, I'm going to stay with you, Corey. Now, the second part of this question is, do you replace Ross and or Gray with Nice and Cashner?
They're all birds of a feather. You know, I mean, these are guys all with good strikeout potential that generally pitch in good pitcher's parks. You know, the concern I have with Cashner, we mentioned this earlier in the show, he may be a guy who gets shut down in September. So you've got to worry about that. Sonny Gray, as Lars said, the league hasn't seen him, but that also means he hasn't seen the league. Is he going to continue to be effective his first time through? Tyson Ross, we talked about him. Nice, we talked about him. So there's risk and reward with all these guys. That's why ultimately I try not to make big lasting commitments to starting pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
I try and be a little bit more, what shall we say, opportunistic.
Opportunistic also.
I try and be a little bit more promiscuous when it comes to starting
nicely
pitchers. I think I can use
well
that word.
Ross and or Gray, Lar, do you replace them with your choices, Cashner and Gallardo?
I would really, and bearing in mind what Corey said about Cashner, just in his issues before getting shut down, that is a possibility. But of all the pitchers mentioned, I like him the best.
Okay.
So I'd be happy to go with him. And actually, one thing that also, even though I wasn't real happy about Nice as a two-star guy, one of the things that I think he might really be benefiting from is the presence of Harvey and Zach Wheeler, just that he doesn't have to be a go-to guy. He can sort of settle in as a number two, number three, number four starter. And I think that does take a lot of pressure off and makes it so guys can pitch a little better. And because clearly Harvey is the number one guy on that team, if there is going to be one. So I'd kind of go Cashner, Nice. The other thing with Nice is it is nice having a National League pitcher over an American League pitcher, just because they do get to face a pitcher every nine hitters. And whether anybody likes it or not, that makes a difference in strikeouts, ERA, whip, everything, most of the time.
There you go. Well said on that one. And finally, before we get to the very last portion of the show, one more question from a listener. I trade Matt Moore for Josh Donaldson and Rafael Betancourt. Thoughts, given that I already have Strasburg and Kershaw in my starting rotation?
And before you answer, Laura, let me just give a little caveat. We talked about this before you came on, that Betancourt is potentially out for the year with that elbow injury. So let's assume now this deal is undone as a result of that. But let's evaluate it as if there were this were yesterday, as if, you know, we didn't know that Betancourt was hurt.
I think that's a pretty good trade, actually, assuming, A, you will get those saves that now are in question. But Josh Donaldson, I think, also is vastly underrated along with his A's team. And I say that he sort of reminds me of Sean Doolittle in a way, in that 3 years ago, Sean Doolittle was a first baseman who couldn't play first base, and he basically adjusted himself and became a very hard-throwing left-handed setup man successfully. Well, Josh Donaldson 3 years ago was a catcher, and the only reason they put him at third base was because, now I can't remember, Scott Sizemore was supposed to be the third baseman, and he got hurt, and they didn't have anybody else. And Donaldson struggled a lot last year. They gave him the opening day job. He couldn't do it. They sent him down. He came back, and A, started to play defensively better, and B, started to hit second half. This year, he's really a third baseman. He plays pretty well. Pretty good defense, good arm, and his hitting is good. His on-base numbers are really good, and I think he's one of those hard workers who understands what he needs to do to get the job done and does it. And I think that makes him a really good gamble. I'm not sure if that ever makes him a superstar, but I do think that makes him a solid 280, 20 homer, 70, 80 RBI guy for the next few years, because he's not that old at third base. Yeah. And I think people don't understand that he isn't. I don't think it's a fluke. I think he's really very good, and he just needed a little time to adjust and to figure out what he needed to do to move to the next level, and he's done it.
Knowing what we knew yesterday, 24 hours ago, I think this is a fair value deal. You know, Moore, after that hot start, the ERA and the WHIP were starting to regress. You know, you might have gotten more had you sold earlier on him, but I don't think this was a terrible return. But, of course, now with Betancourt out, you know, ethically, you're going to undo that trade.
Right.
And I think also it's important to remember this guy has pretty good other arms in the
Yeah. I don't think Strasburg is getting shut down this year.
No.
Yeah.
All right. That is our last listener question. It is now time for one of my favorite portions of the show, shameless plugs and other marketing from our guest, Laura Marcos. How may we find you in all forms of media?
All forms of media. Well, I'll be at the ballpark tonight covering the Pirates and the Giants.
So awesome.
That's most important. Always, you can catch me every Monday and every Saturday at our www.mastersball.com site. I'm at KFFL on the fantasy page every Tuesday, doing tumbling dice, just writing about fantasy. And then at the USA Today every Wednesday, I write about prospects. I discuss three prospects in my little piece, 3 for 3. So you can catch me all of those places. And then musically at www.amazon.com, you can buy my album, Downward Facing Dog, which has really, I don't think it's ever gotten a review under 4 stars out of 10 reviews, which at least I'm proud of.
And also I write
about music on the web with my mates Peter Kreutzer and Gene McCaffrey and Steve Moyer at www.rockremnants.com.
There you go.
Holy cow.
Taking huge bites out of every day.
You're taking some giant chomps out every day. Laura Marcos, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks a lot, guys. It's really been a pleasure. A lot of fun talking.
Thanks a lot. Good talking to you, man.
You too.
Folks, you heard that list, right? Finish the podcast. Go take a big bite out of today.
That's Laura is an awesome writer, dude. He's very entertaining.
There you go. Now you have your mandate. Make this day your day. That's Corey Schwartz. I'm JB. Wherever you may be, I hope it's fantastic.